Larry Mueller here. Thanks for spending some of your time with us on the Ideas Network, and we have a couple of great guests for you today. Our first guest is Barb Pratzel. She is the author of Manna Cafe and Bakery Cookbook, subtitle A Memoir of Two Businesses, a Community, and the Food That Connected Them. So we'll talk to her about the book, how she created some of her well-known recipes, and of course, answer your questions as well. Maybe they're about food. Maybe it's about running a cafe. Maybe you visited Manna Cafe more than once. Do you have a favorite bakery item from there? Love to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Barb Pratzel, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, Larry. Thank you. It's a real honor to be on your show.
Well, your book, it's a cookbook, but it's also a memoir of your two businesses, and I really enjoyed this book a lot. But why did you decide to do both?
Both businesses?
Why talk about your, why include a memoir and a recipe book?
Sure. You know, I started out in professionally out of the journalism school as a writer, and I was writing in the sciences for a long time before I got into the food and hospitality world. And I've just always wanted to write something that was, meaty, not just a cookbook. In fact, when the idea of writing a cookbook came up, you know, I was, all through the years, I was coached to write a cookbook, and I thought, writing recipes. But I wanted, if I was going to write something, I wanted it to be, you know, a good bit more substantial and to have some, I guess, to have some value. And the truth of the matter is that running two businesses, there are a lot of lessons that you learn over the course of running a business. We were in business for a total of 35 years between the Collins House Bed and Breakfast and catering business, and then later Manna Cafe. And it was just such a wonderful combination to be able to reflect on all of those years and what it meant to me and to my life and who I was, and throw some recipes into boot, which I think is probably what most people want are the recipes. You know, memoir is great, but give us the oatcake recipe, you know.
But I got to tell you what, I think people would, and I hope a lot of people get your book, but they would be remiss in not reading the memoir part first. Because it adds so much, to my mind, to when you get to the recipes, of which there are a lot of them, a much more meaning to those recipes.
Well, thank you for saying so. You know, in writing all of that, I reached a point where I said to some of the people working with me, I really want people to read this, and I think they're just going to turn to the recipes. I worked hard to make it, you know, a very readable story. And I think that a lot of people will find personal connections in reading through the memoir, in part because it's a story of Madison. It's a story of food. It's a story of running your own business, which I think a lot of people dream about but have never really dabbled in. And I think there are just a lot of things that people will connect to. And the recipes themselves also have stories that draw back to the memoir. The memoir has stories that move forward to the recipes. And so the whole book is, interconnected that way.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful way to put the book together, for sure. And you mentioned your first foray into hospitality was the Collins House. But maybe before we talk about that, you know, you mentioned a little about your background. Mm-hmm. And your husband, Mike. Maybe talk a little bit more about your and your husband's life and how it plays into everything.
Yeah, sure. Well, I was born and raised in a suburb of New York City into a family that was professional science father who loved to cook. Both my parents loved to cook, and I was raised around the idea. I was raised around a mother who watched Julia Child and wrote down her recipes, and a father who, spent a lot of time being very particular about how he cooked or his expectations for cooking. So I just absorbed all of that as I grew up, and food was always a part of my life. Ultimately came to the University of Wisconsin to do my undergraduate work. My husband, Michael, was born and raised in St. Louis as a son of a third-generation kosher bakery in St. Louis that was very famous. And he had a very different experience. Where I grew up cooking, and he grew up working in the bakery and observing the ethic that comes from being part of a small family-owned business, and, of course, enjoying this bakery that enjoyed such a reputation in St. Louis. So he came to Madison. We met freshman year together. We both came here in the early 1970s, which was a very formative time for, and I write about this in the book, a very formative time for Madison as a city, Madison as a food community. The farmers market was just starting up. The Ovens of Brittany and Baker's Rooms were just starting up. The farmed table kind of concept was just starting up. And we're very grateful to have been a part of that beginning in Madison, because it was one of the many things that connected us to one another through food, and also to Madison as a city. Madison is such a great community. It's food, it's vibrant people, it's eclectic people, the beauty of the lakes and whatnot, and all of that just became a part of our lives. So we, I like to say, and I think I said in the book, that we fell in love with Madison and each other at the same time. It wasn't that we necessarily had a plan to do a business together. I had a degree in journalism, and my husband had a degree in marketing research. But it was around the time that we took a honeymoon, just after a couple of years after we were married, that we found our way to a bed and breakfast, the first bed and breakfast that we'd ever stayed at or even heard of in San Francisco. And it was just an eye-opening and life-changing experience where, the food that we had cooked together, we cooked in the dorm rooms and people thought we were crazy. We cooked out of a little skillet. All of these things suddenly all kind of coalesced into an idea that we could, we love to serve people food, and we love to share food and share Madison, that we could do this together as a couple in a business. And for my husband, that was an easy step. He'd been born and raised in this family business. For me, it was kind of a bigger step.
Yeah.
To the extent that I was raised by a family that expected you to be a lawyer or a doctor, or it was a very different upbringing. But we just put our heads down together and said, we love feeding people. We love sharing food in Madison. Let's do this thing. And, we did it. It evolved out of a passion that we had, for sharing Madison and sharing food. And it's no more complex than that, through a business that we could do together. And that's where the Collins House evolved from.
And it was the first bed and breakfast in Madison.
Oh, I guess it was, there was some technicality about being first or closest to.
Yeah.
It was in the bed and breakfast formative years in Madison as well, really in the country. Even though there had been bed and breakfast in existence for a long time, it was just kind of an up and coming industry. And we were here starting our bed and breakfast here in Madison at the very beginning of all of that as well. So in some ways, the Mansion Hill Inn, another big name B&B sort of a place, we both got our feet wet at the time, and it was a new experience for everybody. So we learned as we went.
And I was 21 years old back in the day working while in school. I worked for Vern and Mona Kalish, who had Kalish Corners Bar. And they lived, the bar was there, and they lived in there was a home connected to the bar, and so they lived there. And I was talking to Vern about it once, and he said, you know, sometimes it's difficult. You're really with your spouse 24 hours a day. And I'm, you know, running a business is hard, and running one with your spouse, I would guess, could be very hard. But how did it work out? How did you work that part out?
Well, you know, we both brought such different things to the table. And I think that that helped us a lot. And I talk about this a little bit in the book. You know, Mike has a mind for numbers and business and finance. And when somebody brings up, the word finance, uses the word finance in this sentence, I tend to zone out and, you know, wander off to the kitchen to bake something. So he was really the business runner person, and I was the cook, baker, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had our different roles, and I think having those different roles kept us from, sure, we had our struggles, we would agree or disagree on things, but by and large, we were both headed in the same direction in terms of what it was that we wanted this business to accomplish, and we were also, particularly in the bed and breakfast in the beginning, I shouldn't say particularly because Manna was full of people, but the bed and breakfast was, there were always people around, and engaging with other people kept us from disengaging from each other. I don't know. That sounds a little, but it's true. I mean, it was the business was. There wasn't really anything to fight about. We each had our own own role, and I think that helped a lot. But I think it's absolutely true that it's not just any married couple or even friends who can make that kind of a relationship work, because you are with one another all the time, and yeah.
And somewhere in the book you wrote that you need to think of business as a lifestyle, not work.
That's absolutely correct. And I think that's what I think it's a big source of failure for some businesses like this. It could have been the case with Manna. But to think of it as something other than a lifestyle, okay, I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to make this much money and I'm going to take, or whatever it is like that. It wasn't coming into work every day. It was waking up and being with our guests every day. Manna, it was waking up and going in to see all the staff and to see the customers and to have a grand old time. And it really was just a lifestyle. And if we had looked at it any other way, I can see where it would it would be more of a struggle to get through it, or you would maybe resent more the things that you have to deal with in the course of running a business that are, breaks or whatever. It's all par for the course. So it is kind of a lifestyle, and I think... And I'm grateful for that. It's like having 35 years of having fun and, bonus, I get a paycheck,
Barb Pratzel, our guest today, she's the author of Manna Cafe and Bakery Cookbook, a memoir of two businesses, a community, and the food that connected them. And we'll give you a chance to join in now, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking today with author Barb Pratzel about her book. It's titled Manna Cafe and Bakery Cookbook, a memoir of two businesses, a community, and the food that connected them. And we'll give you a chance to join in again at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's talk for a minute about that transition from a bed and breakfast to Manna Cafe. Kind of caught things at in a good time in Madison and in that area where you finally opened your restaurant.
Yeah, we had a the bed and breakfast had been running for 20 years. We had a long-term lease with the city of Madison, and that lease was coming to an end. And we had so much demand for the food that we made at the Collins House and through a catering business that was in conjunction with the Collins House. People were constantly asking us, could they please come to breakfast at the bed and breakfast? Unfortunately, no, they couldn't. Or how could they get the food that we did at our catered events? Unfortunately, there was no place to get it. So the idea of a cafe evolved out of wanting to have a larger audience for the food and to carry on the traditions of the bed and breakfast, which were, the bed and breakfast welcomed people from out of town, but it was a very people-oriented business. So we wanted another way to welcome people into our food lives. And we wanted something that was something in the neighborhood that we lived, something that was more part of our immediate community rather than the community of the globe. Little by little, evolved the idea that we would open up something along the lines of, my husband calls it a cafe. He says, no, it's not a restaurant, but it was a restaurant. A small place to have an outlet for the baked goods and the foods that we made and serve our neighbors and be a part of the neighborhood and the community. And always through the years at the Collins House, the driving force with the food was that it be from scratch, that it be only recipes that were really wonderful, that it only use high-quality ingredients. At the bed and breakfast, we used, at the time, steep and brew coffee, and at a time when the coffee scene also was not huge, so, you know, having this wonderful freshly brewed coffee was special at the time. And when we moved, the idea of opening a cafe from the bed and breakfast and bringing all of that into play was that we wanted all of our food from scratch, all of our bakery, all of our pastries. We wanted to make everything ourselves and the coffee. And that turns out to be, in the scheme of restaurants, a fairly labor-intensive way to go, but it's just what our philosophy was, and it was and what we were all about. So that's how, we wanted to continue a business. It just wasn't going to be a bed and breakfast, and in fact, that's what Manna started out as, was a distillation of all that was wonderful from the bed and breakfast.
Jeff in Superior has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Hello, good morning. Hi. In the evolution of food, you may know that eventually, cupcakes became muffins, it seems to me, because muffins are really popular and they're rustic. And when I go on a vacation or on a food adventure, I'm always looking for muffins because there's so many different kinds and so many different ways to make them. Do you have any thoughts about your favorite muffin or a recipe you can share?
Oh, well, my favorite muffin, all of the muffins that are in the cookbook are favorite in some way. And I completely agree with you that a muffin and a cupcake are more or less the same thing. One of the muffins that we made regularly at our cafe was a sunrise muffin, which has carrot and apple and zucchini and coconut all in it. But you wouldn't know it. You wouldn't, if you hated coconut, you wouldn't say, ew, I'm not going to make that because it's got coconut. You wouldn't know. This wonderful sort of carrot cake-like cupcake, which I suggest in the book, you could cut in half and put some cream cheese filling in and turn it, it could go either way, muffin or cupcake. And also the pumpkin chocolate chip muffin, which was perhaps the cafe's most favorite muffin, is included in the book. So there are those two. The one cupcake that's not in the book, and I don't know if you've seen or read the book, but my husband, born and raised in this kosher Jewish bakery in St. Louis, Pratzel's Bakery, known for this very particular cupcake, which if you'd ever have had it, you would crave it for the rest of your life, as my family does. A a sort of a pound cake-like cupcake turned upside down, poured with a chocolate glaze poured over it. That is perhaps my favorite cupcake ever, always will be. But because we were unable to get the recipe from Pratt's, from the Pratt's, which is no longer in existence, we did a conceptual cupcake at Mana, and I have the recipe for that in the book as well, in which we have a different chocolate cake, baked, turned upside down, poured with a shiny chocolate ganache glaze, sometimes filled with a German chocolate filling or some such. So I hope those are some good ideas.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. You'll have to pick up a copy of the book. Jill in Madison emailed that she loves the cookbook and she uses it often. With all the stories woven through the book and your cooking experiences, Barb, Jill feels like you are in the kitchen with her when she cooks.
Aw, that's a wonderful thing to hear. I think it's kind of funny that she says that because my father, who was a severe is a wrong word to use in this situation, but he cracked the whip when it came to cooking technique. And I can remember a moment in my childhood when I was searing off pieces of beef to become part of a beef stew, with my father hanging over my shoulder, yelling at me, no, you can't put them so close together in the pan, and so on. And my father is always with me in the kitchen whenever I am trying to perfect some kind of technique. So I know, I appreciate that you express that sentiment.
Jill, thanks. Maureen emailed that Mana Cafe was a favorite cafe for her, and she has your book, which is wonderful. Her question is, why haven't you included the Monte Cristo recipe in your book?
Oh, so funny. Folks have been asking. There's some folks have asked about the Monte Cristo, and there have been some other recipes. Why didn't you include this? It's my favorite recipe. And the truth of the matter is that this cookbook wouldn't have been affordable to publish if we had included all the recipes that everybody wanted. And we reached a point where we simply had to we had so many soups. We had, I don't know, 15 some odd soups in there, and we had to cut soups out. So the Monte Cristo, I guess, just somehow didn't make the cut, and I'm sorry, honestly. But yeah, it's and in fact, if people have been calling or emailing me or Facebooking me and saying, oh, pretty please, could I have this recipe? And I have dug up and copied, even if it's taking a photo from the original that we have in our Mana notebooks, been taking pictures of things and sending them to people. So any recipe, I am happy to pass along the Monte Cristo recipe if she would like that. She can just send me her information.
And I should mention that you did give us one of your recipes that we posted up on online at ideas at WPR.org/Larry, WPR.org/Larry. Go to today's program date and you'll find it in our notes section. And it's for Josh's steak chili, which looks wonderful. And I'm thinking of making it for Super Bowl Sunday.
Yes, absolutely. Some people make a chili or try a chili or want a chili that's a traditional chili with beans and a certain spice component. This isn't that. And it was created by my son who, when he was, 13, 11, for a cooking contest in the neighborhood, he wanted to make a chili. He didn't want it to be traditional. He didn't want beans, and he didn't want ground beef. And so this chili evolved out of that. It's a steak chili. It uses a sirloin tip type of meat and hominy, which adds a completely different flavor profile to a chili. It's thick. It's wonderful. It's not heavily spicy. I'm a firm believer in you can always add spice, but you can't take it out. So it's it starts out as a medium chili, and you can take it from there. But it's just different and wonderful, and it's the only chili we ever served at Mana.
Well, and he won some contests with that chili, too.
He did. He did. It was astonishing. It was one of those first moments when we knew that this kid was going to be a chef someday.
Barb Pratzel, our guest today, the book Manna Cafe and Bakery Cookbook. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Give a call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us. Email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Steve called to say how much he loved the cafe and knows thousands of people feel the same way and wonders where can folks buy the book?
Oh, I suppose for people not in the Madison area, the easiest thing to do is to go to the link from my publisher. It's Little Creek Press. If you just, I guess, search for Little Creek Press, it's sold online through her website. In the Madison area, there's every bookstore practically in town, and Orange Tree Imports, the Room of One's Own, Mystery to Me, Frugal Muse, University Bookstore. Everybody's got the book here in town. So, and if you really want, you can come to my door and knock. We have cases of them.
Well, they're a lovely, it's really a wonderful book. And by the way, just as an aside, mention the cover is lovely.
Thank you. That's I hope my publisher is listening, because the cover was her design, but it was based on, so the picture that's there is based on an oil painting that was made for Manna by an artist who was teaching at the university at the time when Manna first opened. That would be 2005. This beautiful oil painting that hung in the cafe, so everybody would have recognized it. And she tweaked the cover from there. It's all full of little details that that people might not know about, and that's fine by me. I like hidden surprises. There are some hidden surprises in that picture.
And the other thing I noted were the spoons and kitties.
Yes.
It's another good reason to read the first front part of the book.
Yeah, Spoons and Kitties were both sort of iconic to Manna, and so I was grateful to my publisher for working them through the book the way she did, also for the artist who created the little drawings of the kitties and the spoons. The artist was a baker at Manna. In fact, we had a number of artist-y sort of people who worked for us. In fact, just as an aside, the baking, having a career as a baker is a great place to cultivate artwork. These guys would work at night baking their breads to sustain them so that they could cultivate their art by day, and we launched several careers that way. But, yes, the kitties and the spoons were people came from all over to cultivate their kitty collections. We sold these kitties by the hundreds. And the spoons, which would sit on the tables, and there was a whole assortment and a number of generations of spoons, would be our table numbers that we would assign to people. And customers would get their favorite spoon number. It was a whole, like, sub-world, the kitties and the spoons.
Well, someone called and lost her, but wondered what gives you the most joy in which thing that you cook gives you the most joy?
Well, it's kind of funny. I've been asked this question, and I love the answer seems mundane and simple, but I love to cook scrambled eggs, and I think. You think, scrambled eggs. But scrambled eggs are all about the science and the chemistry. Maybe that's a little bit of my upbringing. That there's a way to make them so they're creamy and custardy and luscious without adding any ingredients, no cream, no milk. It's all about the technique of having a low temperature and taking your time, turning the eggs in a certain way as they cook in the pan, so that they evolve from raw scrambled eggs into this luxurious, almost custard-like. And it never fails to give me pleasure each time I successfully create a plate of these eggs and see the look on people's faces when they try them for the first time. I used to have, silly as it sounds, I used to have, when we started doing breakfast at the cafe, I would train each of the new breakfast cooks myself in how to make scrambled eggs. And I would do it as a demonstration in which I cooked eggs the old way, which is to say sort of dried, more dried out or just less creamy. I'd cook them incorrectly, and then I'd cook them what I thought of as correctly. I would also cook them with no salt and with a little bit of salt. And to feed a forkful of these incredible eggs to the cooks and just watch them light up and want, therefore, also to make eggs as wonderful as this, it gave me such satisfaction, and it became a real badge of pride, I think, among the breakfast cooks at Mana to be able to master these eggs.
And you describe it so the process so well in the book, as you do for all of the recipes. And I've come close, but until I read your in your book on how to correctly scramble them, I thought, okay, there's the, now I see where I was going wrong. I haven't scrambled any since I've read that description, but I'm going to get the description out again the next time I scramble and go that way. And I also can't wait to try your oat cakes, which were apparently one of your all-time favorites among customers.
Which also to me is, it's interesting and kind of, I don't know. They're a wonderful pancake, and they're simple. And, you know, when asked to describe, well, what is it about these oatmeal pancakes that's so special? And I'd say, I don't know, they're pretty good. There's some quality to them that rises them so much above just a regular buttermilk pancake. And part of it, I think, is the oaty flavor. Part of it, there's enough vanilla in them that you get a little bit of that essence of vanilla. The oats that you use are whole rolled oats, not the quick cooking oats, and they have to soak for about 45, the batter has to soak for about 45 minutes before you can cook with them to allow the oats to absorb the moisture from the buttermilk. And that process gives a certain, allows the oats to be, to retain their sort of vaguely al dente bite at the same time for you to not notice them as part of the batter. They're just wholesome. They're not heavy. They're, I don't know what else to say about them. They're pretty wonderful. It amazed me that of all things over the course of the years at the Collins house, it was the singular most requested recipe, and we sort of gifted it to people over the course of time. After Mana started, we kind of became more, didn't give it out as frequently. And when we did, it was just a special thing for people. But there's so many stories that surround the oat cakes, including on the last day of business before we closed for good after COVID, with staff coming in for our last brunch service, and somebody who'd been one of our front-of-house managers coming and having the very last pancakes that were oatmeal pancakes that were put down on the griddle forever. And there are just all these stories that that are so wonderful that accompany these oatcakes.
Yeah. Grant emailed, does the book include any yeast bread recipes?
It does. And it includes, except for one, which is a pita bread recipe, which I included because pita bread's so easy and it's so satisfying. Another very satisfying recipe that, the technique of creating a bread, rolling it flat, popping it in the oven, and then having it poof into this beautiful, with a hole in the middle or a space in the middle. It's just a very you know, you open the oven, you say, oh, my goodness, look what I did. But we have the key recipes for the manna breads, the bialys, the challah bread, the corn schnitzel rye bread, which originated out of Pratzel's Bakery, and the pita bread. I think those four.
Well, they're... And we haven't even touched on the sandwiches and the other things that you have in the book.
No, there's kind of a lot in the book. The sandwiches, to me, what I did was I broke, for us at Manna's, having sandwiches was a matter of having a whole bunch of ingredients at your disposal and mixing and matching them all into the form of some delicious sandwich, which I called building blocks like pesto or bacon jam or, you know, garlic aioli, that were the parts that you assembled into these various sandwiches. So the cookbook, a little weirdly, is organized so that first I talk about all of these building blocks that you can have and then describe many, apparently not the Monte Cristo, but many of the favorite sandwiches using these building blocks, so that if people wanted to actually make their favorite whatever, they could look at the description of the sandwich and then go find the building blocks, you know, within the cookbook.
Well, it's obvious that you created a wonderful community and a place where people could come together, and that rings through so well. And obviously the reason they were coming, not only for the friendships but for the wonderful food. And so it's great to have your cookbook that puts together so many of these beloved recipes that even if you were never in Manna Cafe, you're going to enjoy those recipes. And Barb, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Al wanted to know how to scramble those eggs. We're out of time now. He's just going to have to buy the book, I guess.
There you go. Well, thank you so much, Larry. It was great fun.
And again, to get the book, you can go online to Little Creek Press if you're not in the Madison area, or even if you are, go to Little Creek Press online and you can order right there. Or if you're in the Madison area, you're going to find it at probably pretty much any bookstore that exists in the city, and there are a lot of them. Barb Pratzel, what a wonderful person, and the story that she tells and the recipes that she has in the book are well worth looking at. I really enjoyed the book, and I enjoyed talking with her. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to be enjoying talking once again to our next guest, Jacqueline Michard. I've talked to her many a time, and she's got a new book out, and we're going to talk about The Good Son. That coming up next. I'm Larry Mueller.